"About got it,"
Pangborn said. There was a blue flash and a boom to the east.
"Not a moment too soon,"
Rains exclaimed. He pulled his hands out of Headhunter's side and wiped them on a rag, then closed and latched the plate and started getting his gauntlets back on.
"It'll take a minute to get the steam pressure up before he can get moving."
He glimpsed movement outside the shipwright's building.
"Hold still," Rains ordered. "More enemies."
The boiler was producing a bit of light already, but hopefully they were distracted by the storm glaives being discharged at the Great Dome. A lone figure walked along the main road, heading east, away from the front. It was hard to see in the dark, but his sanguine robes were tattered, and he stumbled a bit, his footing unsure. He stopped at a basin meant for pack animals and the poor, knelt beside it, and dipped his hands into the water. His wrists were chained. He was wearing a mask. Rains glanced back and forth through the windows, but the street was otherwise empty.
"The odds are against it."
But he had to try.
"Stay here."
"What are you doing?"
"Something I have to do. Stay here, no matter what happens."
He looked at the big fighter. Giving him an order would have been pointless.
"Please."
Rains took up his storm glaive and walked slowly to the front door. He opened it a crack. The vassal of Menoth was washing his hands, scrubbing furiously, making his chains rattle. It was as if he couldn't get himself clean. His armor creaked as Rains stepped outside. The vassal froze. He turned slowly and saw Rains's shape standing in the shadows of the shipwright's door.
"Hail, exemplar!"
In the darkness, he must have mistaken him for one of the heavily armored protectorate knights. When Rains didn't respond, the vassal grew concerned.
"I was sent to support the warjack, but it was destroyed, and I was separated from my escort, Allegiant Benedict." That voice. Could it be?
It had been so very long.
"I am trying to find my way back. I was not trying to flee,"
the vassal said, bowing his head.
"I am a loyal servant of Menoth."
"No," Rains stepped out of the shadows.
"You are a slave of Menoth."
The vassal looked up, surprised, then lifted his hands defensively when he saw the Storm Knight.
"Wait," Rains commanded. "I'm not here to kill you."
But he didn't lower his sword, knowing every vassal was capable of using deadly arcane energies. The Menite said nothing for a long time. His eyes could be seen, wide and unblinking white, through the holes.
"Remove your mask,"
Rains said.
"That is forbidden."
There was so much familiar about the voice, but at the same time it was older, distant, and broken.
"I am not allowed—"
"Do it!"
Rains bellowed, heedless of the danger. He stepped forward and jabbed the point of his storm glaive against the vassal's chest.
"Take off that damned mask!"
He reached up with one shaking hand and lifted the iron plate away from his face.
"Ezra."
Rains slowly knelt and placed his sword and shield on the ground. The vassal shrank back, confused. Rains said,
"I'm not here to kill you. I'm here to free you."
He placed his gauntlets on each side of his helmet and lifted it off. They stared at each other only inches apart, like a darkened mirror.
"Enoch, but you're dead. The priests told me you were dead." "No, little brother. Not dead. Just gone. I had gone hunting, remember? I tried to get back to you as soon as I heard them approaching. I swear I tried, Ezra, but they were too swift, and I made it back only to see them take you. I had to flee. They knew I had hidden you from them. I couldn't go back home, and I couldn't stay in a nation that treated its people like criminals just for what they are."
I can't."
Ezra's eyes shone with tears.
"They said you had left me, that they had killed you as you ran. I thought...
"It's all right. Everything's all right now."
His voice cracked from the emotion.
"I vowed I'd get you back."
There was a noise back at the shipwrights.
"Rains, Headhunter's almost ready."
"I can't believe you're alive,"
the vassal whispered.
"They said we'd committed blasphemy and you'd given up your chance of redemption by running."
"Look at me."
Rains took his brother by the shoulders.
"I'm going to get you out of here, away from them.
They're not going to torture you anymore. I'm going to free you from those chains.
No!
Ezra shoved his hands away.
You don't understand. I accept my burden.
What?
You can't take me away. I shouldn't have hidden. We were wrong, Enoch. We were stupid children trying to avoid our responsibilities. I'm doing Menoth's work. My chains are emblems of my submission to his will.
What have they done to you?
They showed me the glorious truth, Enoch.
More lightning crashed near the great dome. The light shifted as torches approached. Reins grabbed hold of the shackles and pulled.
There's no time for this, Ezra. We have to...
Snap. A bolt of arcane energy leapt through his gauntlets, up his arms, and ripped into his chest. Reins crashed hard into the ground, his muscles contorting with unbelievable pain. Ezra stood.
It's true, then. My own brother is a heretic.
He shook his head sadly.
My heart is broken. You came to free me, but it is I who will free you.
Ezra extended one clenched fist, and a shimmering ring of runes formed in the air around it, glowing with arcane power. Tears streamed down his face.
May your soul find the Creator in Urkaen, freed from the doubts of flesh.
Reins reached out desperately, and one smoking gauntlet fell on the precursor shield. Immediately the crippling pain ceased and his body was his own again.
Stop!
He dragged the shield over his chest just as Ezra opened his hand and released the terrible magic. The bolt struck the symbol of Morrow in a blinding flash. His ears were ringing.
Ezra!
Reins lurched to his feet and tottered toward his brother, trying to blink the purple spots from his vision.
Ezra!
He was too late. The killing bolt meant for Reins had been somehow reflected back by the radiance of Morrow. Ezra was sitting on the edge of the trough, staring down at the smoking ruin of his chest. Reins went to him, his boot knocking the iron mask across the dirt. Ezra looked up.
Enoch?
He whispered.
Am I done, then?
Then his eyes rolled back in his head, and he was gone. Torchlight filled the street and he heard angry shouts. The shouts turned to cries of terror as the wall of the shipwrights exploded and a furious stormclad blasted lightning through the approaching protectorate troops. Reins lowered his brother's body gently to the ground. A giant hand fell on his shoulder.
We've got to move, Reins.
Ezra's dead.
Go on, Nestor, I'll hold them.
But Pangborn simply lifted him right off the ground and spun him around so they were eye to eye.
Remember when I said you wouldn't be a whole man until you did what needed doing? Well, now you are, and Signar needs that man. Right now!
Ezra was dead, but at least his torment was over. He took one last look at his brother.
You're right.
Usually am.
Pangborn whistled, and Headhunter looked up from smashing militia into paste.
Run!
The malcontents entered the great dome in a cloud of lightning and slaughter. Militia rushed to meet them, but the barely trained rabble was no match for Stormknight Steel. Madigan cut off a man's arm and then kicked him over a railing to tumble to his death. That was the last for now, but more would be coming. He scanned across his men. All were still standing. Then he took in the room they'd entered. It was so vast it was hard to think of it as a room, and the huge space was a confusing mass of catwalks, stairs, pipes, platforms, giant vats, and complex machines. The tangle of metal stretched several stories up, and the area beneath their feet stretched just as far. Jets of steam obscured their vision. The roar of steam engines made it difficult to hear. Thornbury flipped up his visor and looked around, trying to understand the complex environment.
Wow!
Orders? Cleesby asked.
Find Culpin and stop his attack, Madigan said.
The men exchanged glances. Cleesby spoke first.
How do we do that?
Break everything. Kill everyone.
There were shouts above them as a group of Protectorate guards rushed down a flight of stairs.
Start with those idiots.
Several stormglaives discharged and men screamed as they were blasted apart or sent flailing over an edge.
Spread out!
Soldiers were converging on them from multiple directions. A crossbow bolt cut uselessly across his armor. Madigan spotted the attacker at the other end of a long catwalk. That exemplar was reloading, and another was rushing up to take a shot as well.
I'll deal with you in a moment.
Cleasby!
Yes, sir.
Use that gigantic brain of yours to reason out how this place works and shut it down. If it helps, Culpin will be targeting King Leto's palace first.
How do you... The next crossbow bolt came streaking in, and Madigan struck it aside with his buckler.
I guarantee it.
He turned back to the exemplars and triggered a blast of lightning in their direction, but it crashed uselessly through some pipes. Madigan shoved Cleasby.
I've got men who can fight, but only one can figure this out. Go!
Madigan ran down the catwalk. The first exemplar got his crossbow reloaded, but luckily the bolt zipped by harmlessly. The other dropped his crossbow and lifted his sword, preparing to meet the Storm Knight's charge. They clashed, blades flashing back and forth. Madigan was not nearly the swordsman Vinter had been, but the king had enjoyed using him as a regular sparring partner. The exemplar was no match for the man of whom King Vinter Railthorn himself had once said, "He forces even me to work for each victory." Madigan fainted, and the exemplar turned to meet it, only to be surprised when the glaive wasn't where it was supposed to be. Madigan pierced plate and shoved the sword deep into the exemplar's guts. He drove himself into the exemplar, pushing both of them back toward the crossbowman. All three of them collided violently. Madigan wrenched the glaive out in a spray of blood, and before the first man could fall, he struck again, this time clipping the crossbowman on the edge of his helmet. Disoriented and severely injured, the crossbowman turned, and for the briefest instant, Madigan had a clean shot. He lunged, triggering the power of the storm as he struck, and cleaved cleanly through the exemplar's chest.
"Victory!"
Madigan shouted. The men who could hear him all repeated the battle cry.
"Victory!"
From the noise, the malcontents were following his instructions rather well. If killing people and breaking things was something Storm Knights excelled at, right now they were in their element, totally surrounded by fanatics. Cleasby blocked a flame spear, ran his glaive up the metal shaft, and sliced off several of the Menites' fingers. The spear dropped and Cleasby slashed through his opponent's shoulder with a powerful overhand blow, blasting chunks of smoking flesh in every direction. Private Alsop crashed into a nearby pipe, blood spilling down his breastplate, a crossbow bolt protruding from the top of his armor.
"Pull him behind cover and tend to him," Cleasby shouted at Private Langston.
Then Cleasby ducked a wild swing from a mace and shattered the militiaman's knees. He hit the ground and Cleasby stomped on his head.
"Don't you have something more important to be doing?" Acosta shouted.
"Yes."
He'd spotted a sign giving directions to something called the Central Pump Control. That seemed like a reasonable place to start, but then there'd been all these Menites in the way.
"I need to go that way and down a floor."
The oardsman reached down and picked up Private Alsop's dropped storm glaive, so he had one in each hand. The swords were too long for such use, but Acosta spun them both through the air so fast they made a whistling noise. Testing complete, he shrugged.
"This'll do."
He got ahead of Cleasby.
"Stay behind me, you, aristocrat." He bumped into Thornbury. "Come, my friend."
Thornbury was firing his glaive at the crossbowman who had shot Alsop.
"What?" "Try to keep up. Kill anyone who gets past me. Protect Cleasby at all costs. He is more important than you are."
"What?"
Acosta took off at a run, crashing through several militiamen, swords swinging back and forth, searing and cutting, throwing blood and sparks.
"Follow me!"
"Well, you heard the Thamorite madman,"
Thorny said. A flame guard blocked the catwalk. Acosta's movements were almost too fast to follow, and then the headless Menite corpse was flipping over the railing. Acosta kicked the severed head into the feet of the next soldier, tripping him. Glowing blue from the light of two storm chambers, Acosta leapt over the falling man, launched himself at the next in line, while Thorny stabbed the fallen flame guard to death. By the time Thorny was finished, Acosta had sliced the last flame guard's hand off and was fighting an exemplar, swords flying back and forth in a blur of steel. Cleasby fired, knowing Acosta's body was insulated. The shock disrupted the other swordsman long enough for Acosta to hamstring him, come up under his torso, lift, and hurl the exemplar over the railing. It was a very long way down.
"Take those stairs!"
Cleasby shouted. But Acosta didn't take the time to use the stairs. Instead, when he saw the Menites directly below, he vaulted over the railing and fell right into their midst. He hit the ground with blades whirling about in a blur. Protectorate died left and right as the oarsmen twisted back and forth, constantly slashing and stabbing, in a continuous dance of limb-severing death. Thornbury and Cleasby ran down the stairs and crashed into the tangled, bloody mass melee. A mace struck Thornbury in the shoulder, but he turned, slammed his visor into the Menite's face, knocking him back, then impaled the man on his glaive. Cleesby hacked into a zealot's ribs while reading the directional signs. "Right! Turn right!" He tried to yank the sword out, but the dying Menite was holding on, so he pulled the trigger and blasted the body clean off the sword with a burst of blue energy. For the briefest instant, Cleesby thought bones might have been visible through the man's skin. "Right!" Acosta rounded the corner and disappeared. Lightning flashed, men screamed. A flameguard helmet rolled by, and from what he glimpsed, Cleesby thought there might still be a head inside it.
"When this is over, I'm telling my father the Mercarian League needs to hire that lunatic," Thornbury gasped. "Whatever it costs."
"I don't know if you can afford him." Cleesby spied the yellow sign for the central pump control room.
"There!"
Acosta kicked the door in. This was the heart of the Great Dome. The circular room was a forest of pipes that were bigger around than a man, with a great brass valve on each. Waiting for them in the middle of the forest was a lone warrior.
"Bastion!" Thornbury warned.
The huge warrior walked toward them, easily several inches taller than Pangborn. He was adorned in the helm and heavy armor of the Bastion Order, except while their plates were covered in Menoth's scripture, this armor was covered in dents, scratches, and decades of battle damage. He extended his arms wide, and in each hand was a curved Idrian sword.
"I am Madraz Evrahan, exemplar of Menoth."
The sword suddenly burst into magical yellow flames.
"I am an instrument of the Lawbringer's righteous judgment."
"Great," Thornbury said. "I ever tell you how much I hate bastions?"
"That is no mere bastion."
Acosta came to a stop.
"That is a proper test."
"You will die now, interlopers, and go to Menoth's judgment with my name upon your lips."
The helm turned quizzically, almost as if he were confused.
"But there is a foul taint of corruption upon one of you."
Cleesby and Thornbury automatically stepped away from Acosta.
"Unexpected. My orders can wait,"
the Bastion continued.
"Such darkness must be expunged from this world."
"I am Savio Montero Acosta."
The oarsman spun the two galvanic blades and took up an unfamiliar fighting stance.
"I accept this challenge."
"There is no challenge for one whose soul has been purified by Menoth."
"Then maybe I will take your soul and see for myself," Acosta answered.
The protectorate warrior snarled and started toward them. Cleesby raised his sword, ready to fight.
"No," Acosta said. "He is mine. You two do what must be done. I believe my lady has a lesson she wishes me to learn from this Madraz Evrahan."
More Menites were coming from above. Madigan hurried up the metal stairs. His armor felt too heavy. His arms ached and his chest burned. The fever had left him weak. He climbed onto the next landing just in time to dodge a clumsy spear thrust. He simply bashed the militiaman in the side of the head with his buckler and let him fall down the stairs. Something black flashed by his visor, falling past him.
"Grenade!"
Madigan turned aside as the firebomb detonated on the stairs with a roar. The unlucky man he'd pushed down began screaming as his robes caught fire. Madigan pointed his storm glaive at the zealot who'd thrown the bomb.
"You're next!"
A shout came from above.
"No fire, idiots! You hear that? You hit a charge of van, we'll all be blown to our cairn!"
Madigan looked up. An old man dressed in an odd suit of light armor was standing at a railing at the very pinnacle of the facility, shaking his fist over the edge.
"No firebombs, I say!"
Madigan raised his visor and bellowed at the top of his lungs.
"Gruller Culpin!"
The alchemist leaned over the edge.
"Who knows that name?"
He glared at the storm knight.
"Wait. Do my eyes deceive me? Or is that Sir Hugh Madigan? Can it be?"
"It's been a long time, Culpin."
"Last time I saw you was when we roasted the Hartcliffe brats,"
he cackled. Madigan had always hated that laugh.
"Good times. What are you doing here? Did King Vinter send you to help me?"
"What? Was the man's mind that trapped in the past?
His thoughts were interrupted when the zealot pulled a long knife from his robes and rushed forward.
"You need to stop this," Madigan called as he sidestepped the clumsy slash and cleaved the zealot nearly in half.
"End it, Culpin."
"Ha! Leto's even got you licking his boots now? I thought Vinter had sent you to talk me down, even after I'd clearly explained how I'm doing him a favor."
He was two floors above, and every second Madigan had him talking was one he wasn't using to set fire to Caspia.
"What do you mean, Culpin?"
More zealots were heading his way, readying their bombs.
"No fire, you men-eyed morons! I swear I should have taken those away!"
Culpin shouted. Bombs were lowered in favor of short swords.
"That's better."
"And here I'd thought you'd converted to the Menite faith," Madigan said.
"I'm a man of science and reason, not mindless, memorized chants masquerading as devotion. My asylum, the chance to continue my work and my current bodyguard, were provided to me by a protectorate warcaster with some ambition, who happens to understand a good business arrangement. Now goodbye, Sir Madigan, I've got work to do."
Culpin disappeared back over the edge.
"Culpin!"
There was no answer. He closed his visor.
"Damn!"
The zealots rushed forward in an angry mob, almost tripping over each other to get at him first. Madigan went in swinging. Lightning tore through the mob, and men screamed in pain. A neck was opened in a geyser of arterial spray. A leg came off at the knee. A head was split in two. He was struck and struck again, but his armor held. A protectorate sword broke, and the man behind it died. A dagger thrust caught him, but he slammed his buckler's edge into the zealot's throat and then hurled him over the side of the catwalk. Madigan was standing in a red circle of dying men, gasping for breath, limbs quivering. He looked down to see a wound in his side. He hadn't felt it when he'd taken it, but he certainly could feel it now. There was no time to tend to it.
"Malcontents!"
He was unsure who could hear him.
"Culpin is at the top."
One of the round, black protectorate firebombs was lying in the blood, so he took it. Culpin was afraid of fire inside this place, so if all else failed, Madigan would give him fire to spare. The stares were agony. The wound in his side was deep, and he feared it had pierced his stomach. That was a terrible, lingering way to perish, one he'd seen take dozens of good soldiers before their time. But there was no use dwelling on it when there was so much work still to be done. Upon reaching the next floor, Madigan felt a sharp pain in his back. He hadn't heard the twang of the bolt's release. Madigan turned and fired at the exemplar crossbowman, but he had already retreated behind cover to reload. Madigan touched the end of the bolt, and pain radiated down the shaft and through his body. It had been a lucky shot, right through the arm socket and deep into the muscle. Blood was rolling freely down his back. An exemplar came down the stairs, two at a time, sword raised. It was difficult to fight a man in an elevated position, especially when you were weak and wounded, but Madigan wasn't in a sporting mood. He touched his galvanic blade to the steel steps and discharged. The exemplar jerked as electricity popped through his feet. It wasn't enough to stop him, but Madigan needed only the briefest distraction to swing the glaive upward through the crotch joint deep into the exemplar's pelvis. Madigan twisted it out, and the exemplar fell. The former knight moved out of the way and let the exemplar roll past. The top platform was filled with machines and giant panels, each with a map of one of Caspia's neighborhoods lacquered onto it. Culpin was before one of them, his back turned, quickly pulling levers. There were only 50 feet between them, well within range of the Stormglaive's electrical discharge. The weapon was already humming, charged. Madigan lifted the glaive and fired.
Boom!
Electricity danced around the controls and across the metal grate of the floor, but Culpin turned and grinned, thumping his odd armor. It was a mismatched suit of leather and brass plates.
"Do you think I'm a fool, knight? I'm as insulated as you are."
"I don't mind doing this the old-fashioned way," Madigan said as he started forward.
"Well, I do."
Culpin made a clicking noise. Coal smoke shot up from behind one of the giant panels as an idling boiler was suddenly stoked hot. Steel feet struck the floor and the whole platform shook as the heavy warjack walked out from behind cover.
"Surprised? I built this place with a freight elevator capable of holding labor jacks, and each floor is rated for an additional 10 tons of stress.
You know I never do anything halfway.
Giant club in its right hand, cannon instead of a left arm. It was a protectorate reckoner, a ghastly, tough monster of a warjack. Culpin said,
Now, I'd just have it shoot you and be done with it, but I'm afraid that may be a touch too much gun to be using here in my control room. So I'm going to have to ask you to take this downstairs.
The Reckoner lifted its club and started forward. That thing was designed to crack ironclads. Madigan wouldn't have a chance. But maybe Caspio would. I've got something for you, Madigan said as he pulled the cord and tossed the firebomb into the center of the control room.
No!
Culpin shouted, diving aside just before the bomb detonated, showering the maps with burning Menoth's fury. The club came crashing down. Madigan barely got out of the way, but it didn't matter. The club smashed through the grate, and the whole world opened up around him as his footing disappeared. Madigan fell, but the grate was already rising up to meet him at an odd angle. He hit and began to slide over the edge. The interior of the great dome seemed to reach forever into the bowels of the world below.
Hold!
Culpin shouted at the warjack. It immediately stopped, club ready to end Madigan's life. The Storm Knight hung on for dear life as Culpin came out from behind the control panel, shielding his face from the heat. The alchemist glared at Madigan.
You simpleton. You just condemned your own city. I was using them. I was intending to destroy every quarter filled with protectorate next. I intended to rid this kingdom of its internal sickness and its external foe all in one blow. All you've accomplished was saving the lives of the very fanatics you've been fighting. But you're too late to get what you came for.
Culpin reached for a red lever.
Witness the end of Leto, the usurper king.
No,
Madigan shouted. Culpin laughed.
Don't worry, I can rebuild it.
He pulled the lever. Cleesby was reading the instructions pinned to the corkboard on the wall as fast as he could, but it was hard to pay attention to engineering diagrams when a giant with two flaming swords was crashing about the room battling an Ordic duelist.
Thornbury, grab that valve. Turn it when I tell you.
He looked over and found that Thornbury was staring at the fight. It was hard to blame him. The two master swordsmen weaved back and forth through the forest of pipes.
Thorny!
Thornbury jumped.
Sorry.
He rushed back over.
What's happening?
The needles on the pressure gauges were all pegged red.
The holding tanks here are full of the alchemical mixture. It's bubbling up, building pressure. If the gates are lowered, the gas will be forced through Caspia's pipes in a matter of minutes, and when they're full, there must be some form of ignition.
A bell sounded from the machine.
That's bad.
Bad? How bad?
That bell had been a warning. The gate had been opened. The alchemical mixture was being forced into the palace district.
Shut up and turn that valve clockwise!
Thorny did. Cleesby grabbed another one and spun it hard. Then he reached down, took hold of a big brass lever, and cranked it back.
That should do it. Do the next one as well. Do as many as you can, as fast as you can.
Thorny rushed to the next.
What are we doing? We're dumping the main tanks.
Cleesby ran back and looked at the pressure gauges. The needles were dropping.
If there's no pressure from the alchemical mix, it won't be forced through the pipes in sufficient quantity to cause as much... I get it. Where are we dumping it? Well,
Cleesby hadn't thought that part through. He looked back at the instructions. He'd been focused on saving the palace and its surrounding quarter. More than likely, it was going to pour back into the tanks below the Great Dome itself and then overflow into the Black River, which meant that as soon as Culpin set off his magical ignition system, this whole section of the dock district would probably be obliterated. But there was no use dwelling on that.
Just keep turning valves.
Madigan pulled himself up the grate. He had to let go of his storm glaive so he could use both hands to get up the slick surface. The sword slid off the edge and disappeared. The Reckoner raised its club and he had nowhere to go.
I told you to hold!
The Reckoner heeded its marshal, but it watched the Storm Knight through its glowing vision slit, waiting for the order to smash.
You ruined it, Madigan. I don't think you realized what a mess you've made of things.
Culpin walked up behind the warjack, but he was smart enough to not get any closer than that.
I'll accomplish what I told the Protectorate I'd do when I offered them my services to begin with.
Their honorable hierarch turned me down, but luckily there were others with power in Sewell far more pliable. As we speak, my marvelous invention is collecting beneath the most vital parts of Caspia. The palace will be destroyed, taking the usurper king with it. So, too, the sanctium, the heart of the Church of Morrow, gone. The War Council, gone. Any members of the Royal Assembly still in the vicinity, dead. All those who conspired to cast down King Vinter, and all who'd bowed their heads to Leto afterward, all of them burned to ash and scattered on the winds, just like traitors deserve.
You'll kill thousands.
I'd kill millions if I thought it would make a difference. This is for the greater good of Signar, after all. I'm looking at the broad view. Of course, a decade ago, when I presented this plan to the Protectorate, hoping for a new home and funds to continue my research, the plan was to do this when they invaded Caspia, not when you invaded Sewell. But things worked out. This way I got a good field test beforehand. That explosion in central Sewell, that was done with a mere 500 gallons of my mixture. Whereas I just released 30,000 gallons of it into Caspia.
Culpin clapped his hands.
Oh, joy! I can't wait to see how it lights up the sky. It'll be marvelous.
Madigan pulled against the grate, struggling upward. His wounds left him unsteady. His legs were hanging off in space. The Reckoner watched him, waiting for the order to club the Storm Knight flat.
I'd love to see the look on Leto's face for the brief instant before the pressure strips the flesh from his bones. If the Protectorate were to start another war, Leto and his lackeys would die in a horrendous fire. But the invading Protectorate troops would all be killed when the pipes beneath their lines detonated as well. By their own mistake, most would reckon. Then King Vinter could return, triumphant, and his people would cheer as he rallied them around his banner, entered Sewell, and destroyed the Menites forever.
Caspia would be destroyed.
It's old. New is better.
Culpin spread his hands wide.
Imagine the modern city I could build in its place. But now I'm only going to blow up part of Caspia so neither of us gets our way, except for the Protectorate. I'm sure those backward superstitious dolts will have a splendid time rooting like pigs through the ruin of civilization. Perhaps in another 100 years they'll reinvent the sundial, or maybe the wheel.
Though he couldn't see any of them, Madigan could still hear his men fighting in the maze of pipes below, so maybe all wasn't lost.
Vinter's done. He'll never return.
We shall see.
Culpin pointed to Madigan and spoke to the Jack.
If this man gets any closer, hit him with your club.
He then walked away to get a better view through one of the windows.
My alchemical solution is rather stable. It has to be at the correct density to detonate at its full potential. Any minute now, the steadily increasing pressure of my mixture will reach its ignition point.
Culpin pulled out a pocket watch and glanced at it.
This is taking a bit longer than expected. I'd check my instruments if you hadn't just set them afire. Crash!
The noise had come from the main floor. Madigan twisted around in time to see a huge chunk of the wall fall inward, followed by one ugly warjack. Headhunter had plowed right through the militia guarding the building, squishing them underfoot. Its huge blade swept through the building, tearing soldiers in half. Pangborn and Rains were right behind, shouting and firing their weapons.
"Up here!"
Madigan shouted.
"Shoot this Jack!"
Rains heard him, grabbed Pangborn and pointed. The Jack Marshal shouted a command at Headhunter. It swiveled toward the target. It was as if time slowed down when the two warjacks saw each other. He knew it was impossible for a jack to actually have an expression, but Madigan could have sworn Headhunter got excited. It ran across the great dome, plowing through soldiers, pipes, and tanks, leaving a trail of blood and steam in its wake.
Once it was within range, Pangborn shouted another command, and Headhunter's massive galvanic blade rose, buzzing with charge. It fired, electricity forming an instant bond between the two warjacks, which then turned into a blast of sound that swept over them all. He could taste the electricity. The Reckoner stumbled back, crashing through the smoldering maps. Madigan held on as tight as he could as the Grate shook under the impact, threatening to shake him loose to fall to his death.
"Destroy that jack!"
Culpin shouted.
"Destroy it!"
The Reckoner didn't go to the freight elevator. Rather, it went to the edge, missing Madigan by inches, and stepped off. It fell to the next landing with a terrible impact. Beams bent and the interior pyramid of the Great Dome shuddered. It went off another floor and landed on the main. Without hesitation, the two warjacks launched themselves across the space, crashing through anything helpless enough to get in their way. Culpin had said he'd rated each floor for an extra 10 tons of stress, except with the two of them, there was closer to 13 tons of angry warjack going at it. The interior structure of the Great Dome swayed as if it were experiencing an earthquake. Madigan climbed. The wounds in his side and back had drained him of strength, but he found more and pushed on. Headhunter's blade crashed into the Reckoner's chassis in a shower of sparks. The club came around and tore their Stormclad's damaged shield arm clean off. Pangborn had to dive for cover as the huge arm flew past. Headhunter simply lowered its shoulder and rammed its body into the Reckoner. The Protectorate jack hit a water tank, which burst under the onslaught, and a wave swept through the running Menite soldiers, sweeping them from their feet. Madigan stood up and shouted at his men below.
"Sergeant, retreat! Get the malcontents out of here!"
Raines signaled that he'd heard and began repeating the order. Madigan turned back to the thing that had brought him here. Culpin was checking his pocket watch again, annoyed.
"It should have detonated by now. Something has thrown off my calculations."
The arcane mechanic saw Madigan coming toward him and calmly drew a hand cannon.
"I've no time for you."
He fired. The heavy bullet hit Madigan low in the torso. He stumbled, but didn't fall. Raising one hand to his abdomen, Madigan found a perfect round hole in the plate. Struggling to breathe, he took a halting step forward. Culpin scowled at the pistol. The pain hit then, piercing through his side, but Madigan kept walking. The armor hadn't stopped the extremely powerful round, but it had slowed the bullet enough that it didn't kill him on the spot. It would be enough.
"Damn you, Madigan, it's too late. Even if my calculations are off, it'll still detonate. You'll see,"
he sneered.
"But you're too stubborn to accept defeat even when it's obvious. Vinter was right about you. He must have known all was lost when he sent you to murder Hartcliffe and his spawn, because a lesser man wouldn't have had the stomach for it."
His platoon was still fighting, and more Protectorate were sure to converge on the noise. Headhunter and the Reckoner were pounding the daylights out of each other. A pipe was split open and fire came belching out. A purple liquid splattered across both of the warjacks and shimmered with arcane energy as it caught fire. A chain of small explosions shook the main floor of the Great Dome. It felt as if the whole place was about to collapse in on itself. Madigan took another halting step forward.
"In the name of the Crown, I hereby arrest you for high treason. Surrender your arms and stand down. Resist, and I'll kill you."
The old alchemist knew he was no match for Madigan in a fight. The hand cannon was dropped on the metal floor.
"I yield."
Madigan looked down at the pistol lying on the grate between them. Then he looked back up and smiled, showing bloody teeth.
"Nobody wants you alive, Culpin."
"What?"
Madigan stepped close enough to put his gauntlets around the old man's neck and squeeze. Eyes bulging, Culpin clawed futilely at the gauntlets.
"Those are the exact words I told Earl Hartcliffe all those years ago. At least he had the guts to fight for what he believed in,"
Madigan said as he dragged the struggling man to the broken edge of the platform. He saw a spreading puddle of the flammable purple ooze far below, seeping up through the grates. He released his grip a bit and Culpin gasped for breath.
"Let me live! I have information! Valuable information!"
He looked down at the bubbling alchemical mix.
"Let me live! I beg you! Have mercy!"
"You long for a return to Vinter's rule?"
Madigan snarled.
"Then receive his brand of mercy!"
and he hurled Culpin over the side. Culpin's scream cut off sharply when he landed on a metal catwalk several floors down. Madigan leaned over to watch. The fall hadn't killed him, but it had obviously shattered bones. He lay there groaning, and the groan turned into a long sob. Then the flooding mixture reached him, and he must have realized what it was. Culpin splashed and wailed, thrashing in the rising alchemical soup. A rainbow sheen had formed across the surface of the purple ooze, and Culpin desperately tried to claw his way out of it, but it was stuck to his skin and had seeped through his clothes. Sparks and burning debris fell into the mix, and the surface ignited. The fire spread rapidly, hissing and sputtering. Culpin was engulfed in licking flames, his body consumed by the fruits of his mind. The base of the great dome turned into a sea of fire. Madigan stumbled for the stairs, weak with blood loss. He felt a coldness inside his chest. His life was drizzling out through his wounds. He did not remember falling, but he found himself lying face down on the floor. There was nothing left to give, no final reserve of strength, just the blessed darkness of unconsciousness. And then the fire would take him. It was a fitting end.
I hope the men got out. Morrow preserve them. This kingdom needs good men.
Noxious smoke surrounded him. Somebody coughed. Boots struck the stairs.
Madigan,
he heard. Hands latched onto the straps of his armor and pulled.
Pangborn, up here!
He grimaced in pain as he was lifted. Something was tearing inside.
Rains,
Madigan gasped.
I ordered you to flee.
Madigan's malcontents are notoriously bad at following orders, sir.
Rains hoisted him up and began dragging him down the stairs.
Now, hold on.
The great dome was collapsing all around them. Cleesby had saved the palace district, but he'd doomed this place. Back pressure had built up in the big pipes, and they were bulging dangerously. Rivets popped and shot out like bullets. Thornbury had found a ladder to the next level up and already started climbing.
Acosta, we've got to go.
The oardsman was circling the dangerous Madra Zevrahan.
I'll be along.
They'd clashed repeatedly, with the much bigger and stronger Zevrahan chasing Acosta around the room. But Acosta was far too quick and had used their complex environment to his advantage, constantly keeping machinery between himself and the flaming swords.
I still have more to learn. Whatever the lesson, you'll get to analyze it in Arcane if you don't hurry, because this whole place is about to explode.
Cleesby warned as he began climbing the ladder.
Wrap it up!
Acosta sighed.
Very well.
Your skills are great, but they will not be enough to overcome mine, child of murder,
Zevrahan said to Acosta. He circled, keeping one flaming sword between them defensively and the other low at his side, ready to disembowel at the first careless mistake.
My power comes from Menoth.
That is your mistake. Relying on another for strength.
Acosta stepped a few feet to the side and shifted his grip on the pair of storm glaives.
My power is my own.
Zevrahan roared as he struck, lunging forward, driving the tip of his blade at Acosta's chest. He dodged at the last possible instant, raising a glaive to smoothly deflect the flaming sword. So fluidly, it was almost as if Acosta were guiding his opponent's sword himself. Too late, the protectorate warrior realized his mistake. The flaming sword was guided directly into a bulging pipe and pierced the metal. Acosta stepped back as a pressurized jet shot from the hole. It ignited as it rolled down Zevrahan's flaming blade, a rolling ball of liquid death, and the giant was almost instantly covered in sticky, consuming doom. He went spinning away, thrashing and beating his hands at his own body. Acosta walked toward the ladder, muttering,
"Menoth should have taught him how to pay better attention."
Climbing a ladder for several stories while wearing heavy armor was not for the weak, and Cleesby was thankful for all the hours Madigan had worked them like dogs. It didn't help that something was shaking the ladder. With aching limbs, Cleesby heaved himself onto the main level. Headhunter and a protectorate reckoner were throwing each other through vital supports, and every impact made the whole building sway dangerously. Private Langston waved his arms overhead, getting their attention. A new warjack-sized exit had been made for them. The wounded had been gathered, and it was almost all of the platoon. He quickly counted, noting they were a few bodies short, but he'd seen Debney and Newman killed for certain earlier. Alsop was somehow still breathing, even with a hole in his neck.
Cleesby caught sight of Pangborn running through the flames, carrying the limp form of another Storm Knight in his arms.
Madigan!
Rains appeared right behind him, slowing just enough to blast apart a zealot.
That's everybody, move out!
They rushed through the hole, nearly everyone wounded and only half moving under their own power. They were in the middle of thousands of Protectorate, but the fire, explosions, and smoke provided some cover. Half a block away, a wagon team was thrashing and tearing at their ropes, trying to get away from the crumbling dome.
"Seize that wagon," Cleesby ordered. "Get the wounded in back."
There was a high-pitched whine. It came from the south, growing steadily louder.
"Incoming!"
Raines shouted. An artillery shell struck just to the north of the great dome. Cleesby looked to the river and saw a flash. He heard the boom a second later. It was a Signaran warship.
"The Navy's bombarding the great dome." Well, at least Commander Bradher believed my message.
That would have been a small comfort if it hadn't been too late to stop Culpin. The solution was just as liable to kill all the malcontents as any Protectorate, and worst of all, the first cannonball that hit one of the big tanks was going to blow this whole neighborhood apart. Thornbury had gotten to the horses. When he cut the legs out from under one of the Menites guarding them, the other ran for his life. Their aristocrats slashed through the ropes tying the team to a fence, grabbed hold of the reins, and began pulling the terrified animals along. A cannonball landed less than 100 yards away, and the horses rose and kicked, but Thornbury held on and kept them from bolting. Luckily, they were yoked together and appeared to be mostly deaf. They had probably spent the war hauling artillery. Dirt and chunks of rock were falling from the sky as more cannonballs landed. Wounded Storm Knights were shoved onto the bed of the wagon. Langston got in the seat and took up the reins.
"Move!"
Cleesby shouted. Only half of the platoon were on board, but the rest would have to run for it. It wouldn't take the Navy long to zero in on the dome, and when one of the main tanks of Culpin's lethal concoction was hit, Thornbury got out of the way, and Langston cracked the whip. Not that it mattered, as the team was desperate to get away from the fire. Cleesby ran alongside the wagon. A dazed Temple Flame Guard stumbled into their path, but the horses just crunched him underfoot, and the wagon wheels finished the job. Pangborn gave a sharp whistle, trying to signal for Headhunter to follow them, but he doubted their Stormclad would hear.
"Faster!" Cleesby shouted. "It's going to blow!"
They passed surprised Protectorate troops who were busy taking cover from what they thought was an ordinary naval bombardment. They had no reason to expect to see a wagonload of bedraggled Storm Knights come tearing down the main avenue. A cannonball struck the great dome. A huge section of the curved roof collapsed in on itself. A pillar of fire shot into the night sky. The Navy had found their target. A series of flashes lit up the haze-covered river. The booms came a split second later, and then cannonballs were falling like rain. Hulls appeared all across the top of the great public works. One of the big holding tanks was hit. The whole of the world seemed to fly to pieces as the shockwave washed over them. The team of horses came apart and the wagon crashed, its rear rising as the front plowed into the dirt, and then the whole thing flipped over, flinging wounded Storm Knights like leaves on the hot wind. The world stopped spinning long enough for Cleesby to realize the unfocused light in front of his face was the meager sunrise coming through his visor. He raised one shaking hand and pushed up the visor so he could see. The sky was filled with black smoke, but the first weak bits of orange daylight were poking over the horizon. He was covered in bits of rocks, splintered boards, and shards of glass, but it all fell off as he struggled to his feet. He looked back and saw a smoking hole where the great dome of Caspia had once stood. Their stolen wagon was on its side, bodies lying all around it. Some were moving, most were not. He limped toward them. Men were groaning, coughing. A horse was crying. Another one was loose and running in circles. Their wounded had been thrown from the overturned wagon. He had no idea what state any of them were in. They were deep behind enemy lines, surrounded by Protectorate forces. Cleesby didn't know what to do. The others began to stir. It was almost like the heat and pressure of the explosion had blown out their consciousness like a candle, but it was coming back now. Langston had been thrown from the seat and was cursing as he realized his landing had broken his leg. Watersford had been hit with a piece of flying pipe, and it had crushed his helmet so badly that Cleesby didn't need to check to know he was dead. But he couldn't find the one he needed to find, the one man who would know what to do, because he always knew what to do.
"Madigan!" Cleesby shouted. "Where's Madigan?"
"He's over here," Acosta said.
Cleesby limped over to the other side of the wagon. Madigan was lying on his back.
The straps of his armor had been cut away and his breastplate removed. Acosta moved aside, and Cleesby saw that Madigan had a ghastly laceration deep on one side of his abdomen and a large-caliber bullet hole on the other. The lieutenant was ghostly pale, his skin a weak gray. Acosta gave him a sad look and shook his head in the negative. Cleesby knelt next to him.
Madigan?
His voice cracked.
Can you hear me, sir?
Madigan opened his eyes. One was bloodshot solid red.
Cleesby,
he whispered.
Glad to see my conscience made it through.
Not through yet, old friend,
Acosta said, nodding down the street.
We have company.
Through the settling dust, shapes appeared, and as clarity grew, hope died. They were Protectorate soldiers. Hundreds upon hundreds of them. There was no escape.
Make the bastards work for it,
Madigan gasped. Cleesby found his sword in the debris. He walked toward the advancing Menites, stopped in the middle of the road, and waited, prepared to die like a true storm knight. Reins stood at his right hand.
Did you ever find what it was you were looking for behind those masks?
Cleesby asked.
Yes,
Reins answered.
But it wasn't what I thought.
He readied his precursor shield. Thornbury came up on his left.
You should get out of here, Thorny,
Cleesby suggested.
You might be able to escape in the confusion.
The noble blood of Signar won't run thin today. Besides,
Thorny grinned,
I'm too damned tired to run.
Pangborn joined them. He put his storm thrower over one shoulder, took a look at the approaching troops, and chuckled.
They don't know what they're getting themselves into, picking a fight with the malcontents.
No, they don't,
Acosta said, as he walked up behind Reins, still armed with a pair of storm glaives. He spun them both through the air.
Let's show them.
There were only five of them able to stand against an army. The marching Protectorate force was being led by two full squads of exemplar knights. They were followed by an untold number of Temple Flame Guard, their upright spears so numerous it was like a field of waving grass. A shout went up, and a horn was blown. The Protectorate came to a stop a mere 50 yards away. The street was quiet as the two sides studied each other. Five men should have been nothing more than a bump in the road, but the Protectorate commander must have recognized there was more to these men than that. A lone exemplar broke from the Protectorate line and walked toward them. It was a remarkably brave maneuver, as there was nothing his fellows could do to protect him. He stopped 10 yards away and lifted off his helmet, revealing the face of a weathered, tired soldier.
What happened here?
He asked without preamble, nodding toward the flaming wreck of the Great Dome.
We killed everyone and broke everything,
Cleesby answered. The others laughed.
Just following orders.
I see.
The exemplar looked back at the overturned wagon.
You have many wounded. Are your orders for this few of you to block my company from passing?
I suppose that depends on where you're passing to.
We are returning to Sul. The war is over.
What?
Cleesby looked at the others.
I don't...
You have not heard.
The exemplar held his head high.
Menoth has let his will be known. Through his holy voice, Harark Voil is dead, slain by the sword of Menoth's harbinger. The war is over. Each nation is to return to their own borders. Caspia is yours for now. Sul belongs to Menoth forever.
They'd been fighting for a year.
They'd given so much, they'd lost
so many. It couldn't be.
This had to be a trick. He could sense their mistrust.
When I was told the news, I fell to my knees and gave thanks. I poured out my heart and wept for my dead brothers and sisters. And I wept for their families and their children who would never know their love. I thanked the Creator for this respite and I rejoiced I didn't have to spill any more blood.
For a moment, the exemplar wasn't a fanatical enemy. He was just another tired soldier.
Please, step aside, Storm Knights. My men just want to go home.
Cleesby nodded.
Very well, Exemplar. You may pass.
Thank you.
The officer put his helmet back on and returned to his column. They returned to Madigan. The lieutenant was barely conscious. His breathing was shallow and weak. Cleesby knelt at his side.
The war's over. The Protectorate is retreating back to Sewell.
Good. Good work, lads. You've made me so proud.
You saved the city,
Cleesby said.
You saved Caspia. You saved the king.
No. I only saved you soldiers from yourselves. And you saved the city.
Madigan smiled weakly. The malcontents looked at each other. They knew it wouldn't be long now.
My last orders,
Madigan whispered.
See to the men. Save whoever you can. Get them home.
Cleesby looked up and nodded. The other four moved away.
Last request. Those books about knights.
I know they're foolish now, Madigan.
Real knighthood wasn't about chivalry or glory. It was about battle brothers doing whatever they had to in order to protect what they loved and each other.
No. People need heroes. Even if you've got to make them up.
Madigan coughed.
The Sixth were real. Tell their story.
I will. I promise.
Last, deliver this message.
Madigan's voice had become dangerously quiet, and Cleesby had to lean in close to hear his whispered final words. He listened carefully until Madigan trailed off into silence. Cleesby leaned back. Madigan was staring up at the sky. He removed his gauntlet so he could gently close his commanding officer's eyes. The Protectorate troops were marching past, in formation. Cleesby looked up to see the Knight Exemplar watching him. As the last of his men went by, the Exemplar moved on after them without a word. He had left a wagon and horses so the Storm Knights could carry home their wounded and their dead. It was one last show of respect between capable foes. Kelvin Cleesby patiently waited his turn. There were far more important people than him coming and going about the War Council. The uneasy armistice with the Protectorate was holding, but already Kador had taken advantage of Signar's distraction and stepped up their efforts in the north. Crixians were raiding up and down the coast and had been spotted deeper inland in northern Signar. There was word that more of the Trollkin Creels within their borders were in open revolt, and the Scorn Raiders were staging out of the Bloodstone Marches. These were dark times for the kingdom. As for Cleesby, he would go wherever they sent him, because that's what you did when you were a soldier living in a time of war. The interior of the royal palace was more beautiful than he'd expected. This was a much better place to pass the time than the barn. Because the Sixth was back up to a full complement of troops, it was rather crowded. His request for most of the original malcontents to be returned had been granted, and they'd had a steady stream of new recruits and replacements to fill in the gaps. In fact, they'd lost only one man since the end of the war. One morning he'd woken up and found Acosta's bunk empty and his kit missing. There had been a note.
Let me know when you find another good war. I know you will.
The barn was also very loud, usually because of the hammering. Since Headhunter had been found in the rubble of the Great Dome, burned but still mostly in one piece and with a functioning cortex, Pangborn had been working on that undying warjack around the clock. This time, though, he had the army's blessing, a couple of Gobber assistants, and actual parts. Their jack was looking pretty good, complete with the Protectorate Reckoner's severed head added to its chain. An aide approached.
He will receive you now.
Cleesby swallowed nervously, gathered up his gift, and followed the woman into the council room. King Leto Railthorn was not well. That much was obvious.
Though months had passed, the severe wound he'd taken while fighting Hierarch Voyle was not yet healed, even with the ministrations of the finest physicians in all of Caspia. Cleesby could only assume the business of rebuilding a city and fortifying a nation could not wait, so Leto pushed on, despite the pain, just like any other servant of Signar.
"Lieutenant Kelvin Cleesby, 6th Platoon of the 47th Storm Knights Company," the aide announced.
Cleesby entered and then knelt before his sovereign, as he had been instructed. He'd never dreamed he would meet his king, and especially not under these circumstances. There was no pomp, no banners or trumpets, and especially no fancy throne room with the trappings of the kingdom. He was grateful for that. They were in a simple conference room, and the king sat in a regular chair at a table with a map of Signar upon it.
"Please, be seated, Lieutenant,"
Leto gestured at another chair. Cleesby did as he was told, careful to keep the bundle gripped tightly under his arm so it wouldn't unravel.
"It is an honor, Your Majesty."
Leto looked younger than he expected, though recent events had surely worn him thin.
"I've already been briefed by Scout General Rebald about Groler Culpin's plot and what happened at the Great Dome. The kingdom is thankful for your actions. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for your platoon."
Cleesby smiled. It wasn't just because of his love of history and his interest in architecture that made him glad he'd kept this place from burning to the ground.
"It was really Lieutenant Madigan's platoon, then?"
Leto nodded slowly.
"I am not normally so forthcoming on a matter of so personal a nature, but you are aware of my history with Sir Madigan. I believe I am."
The king seemed distant. Surely rising up against his tyrannical brother had to still weigh on him.
"Madigan was simply following the orders of his king, but he took from me a very dear friend and a family of whom I was deeply fond. It was only after a great deal of thought and reflection that I granted Madigan amnesty along with the other loyalists. I felt it was for the best if the kingdom moved past those events as quickly as possible."
"You thought about executing him but didn't want to be thought of as a vengeful king," Cleesby said. Sadly, he still suffered from speaking before thinking. Leto frowned.
"Forgive me, Your Majesty, I don't mean to speak out of turn."
Leto chuckled.
"I've heard you can be a painfully honest man, Lieutenant." "Yes, Madigan followed orders, but those orders wounded me to my core. He stole the lives of my good friends, and that's a difficult thing for a king to let go. You are a good man, Your Majesty, but so was Madigan in his own way. His loyalty to his men and to Signar was unflinching."
The king gave him a very tired smile.
"For today, your recent service has brought you a bit of leeway in your honesty, Lieutenant. Please, carry on." "Thank you, Your Majesty."
They had already pinned a medal on his chest, but he and the king both knew that wasn't why Cleesby had been summoned to the palace.
"I've come bearing a message. I was told you were rather insistent that you would give it to me alone. I promised Madigan, and he gave it to me with his dying breath."
Cleesby paused and looked the King of Signar square in the eyes.
"He told me to tell you, I am sorry."
Surprised, Leto blinked a few times. The blinking became faster. He put one hand over his mouth, and then the king had to look away for a moment to collect himself.
"That was his entire message, Your Majesty. I am sorry to have troubled you, but I made a promise to a dying man."
Leto bit his lip, trying to conceal his emotions.
"Thank you, Lieutenant. That will be all."
Cleesby stood and took the rolled banner from under his arm.
"I know it's unworthy, but on behalf of the men of the Sixth, I'd like to give you this standard as a gift."
He unfurled it and set it on the table. 6th Platoon of the 47th Company. Madigan's Malcontents. Most Storm Knight standards had more eloquent mottos, often long sayings relating to honor, duty, and valor, or even quotes from kings or the wisdom of the Ascendants. But the Malcontents' motto consisted of a single word: redemption.
This has been an Audible Frontiers production of Into the Storm, written by Larry Correa, Narrated by Ray Porter. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright 2013 by Privateer Press. Production copyright 2013 by Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.